Hello, crackheads. You're listening to Paranormal Cracktivity. I'm Justin.
And I am once again positively, absolutely Drake.
Are you 100% sure about that?
Are we ever 100% sure about anything, Justin?
You have a point. You have a point about that, Drake. How are you doing today?
How am I doing today? I'm doing fine. I'm doing wonderful.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
How are you doing?
Oh, honestly, I'm a big mix of emotions, but I'm really excited, and I'm doing well. I can't complain.
How is Sadie doing, most importantly?
Oh, she's doing well. She's looking at me really upset right now. I think that she's upset because she saw me packing, and that always makes her really upset because she's consistently afraid that I'm going to leave her behind no matter where we are. And yeah, that's always fun.
That was deep. Sadie has some issues that she needs to get fixed.
Well, it's crazy because like 96% of the time I don't leave her behind. Like only every once in a while do I leave her with my parents, and she's somewhere comfortable so she's not upset at my parents' house, you know, but she still will just freak out as soon as she sees me putting like clothes in a bag. She's like, "Oh no. Oh no, 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 no."
Absolutely not.
How is Bodie?
How is Bodie? I think I don't want kids. Because if this dog is driving me up the wall, imagine what a toddler is going to do to me.
Yeah, no, not for me. I can tell you that much.
But no, Bodhi's fine. He's getting cuter. He's also not chewing things as much, so I'm enjoying life. He's enjoying life. And he just went on a walk.
Oh, wow. I love to hear it. I love to hear that y'all are enjoying life.
We're enjoying each other's company. It's just us.
That's nice.
It is nice.
Always nice. It's just me and Sadie. I'm about to be on the road again, so
that's exciting. I do not know how you do that. That seems like it would stress me out.
You know, the first time that I did this, I was like, I'm going to have like a plan and everything. And this time, I'm just kind of like, you know, I'm just going to go to Seattle and go to Denver and check it out. Maybe go visit the schools that I wanted to see. I'm thinking about going to University of Denver and then also Oregon State University and checking out the forestry program and the music program.
Those are some good places.
They are some good places. Yeah, the forestry program at Oregon State is phenomenal, and they have a study abroad program, which is what I'm interested in doing after I leave California. So I'm studying abroad, that is, forests and agroforestry. So yeah, who knows where life's going to take me. I have no idea.
Shit, I don't know what that is, so you're ahead of me.
Well, maybe that's for another episode. I'll certainly teach you one day.
I'm waiting for Beyonce to drop these Renaissance World ticket. World Tour tickets. She's playing with my bank account, because if I need to save $3,000 to get a good Beyonce seat, I need to know yesterday. If she's going to be going on tour this summer, I needed to know yesterday so I can like cut all my expenses and just save up. Because I will be having a blast at the Renaissance World Tour.
Oh, yeah. I'll be right there with you.
Yeah. But you know what I'm not excited for?
What is that?
Part 3 of this monster.
Boo.
Of a person.
Yes, I know.
Boo, you stink.
I want to go ahead and apologize to the crackheads. I know that I said that I was going to get this out early. Obviously, that did not happen to the people that are keeping up with us at this moment in time. For the future listeners, that won't be a problem. But I apologize that this is later than I expected it to be. I hope that it's informative, and I hope that you enjoy this episode more than the other ones when we get to finally see some justice for the victims of Dennis Nielsen. So, I think with that, we are going to go ahead and jump on in. Now, most of this episode will be less graphic. We're mostly just going to be discussing the trial and imprisonment of Nielsen, but first we need to go back to the arrest, which started with the disposal of the final three victims. So, if you listen to part two, you know that Nielsen committed a total of 15 murders, and 12 of these occurred at his flat on Melrose Avenue, and these bodies were burned, and the ashes were raked into the ground by Nielsen. Here's a quick quote about that by Brian Masters. "The larger bones he broke as best he could with a shovel and flung them over into the waste ground behind the bottom fence. At least one of these turned up in the jaws of a neighborhood dog some time later. Into the hole by the bush, he shoved several piles of ash." Quote, "Driving away from 195 Melrose was a great relief," end quote. It was October 5th, 1981. So that's from the book, Killing for Company by Brian Masters. And that's just to give you an idea of, like, as he was driving away from Melrose Avenue and going to his new flat, like, what he was doing and how he felt. It was a great relief for him to dispose of this stuff and leave it behind and move to his next place. The last three murders occurred in his attic flat at 23 Cranley Gardens, and these were disposed of in a much more gruesome way. So starting with the body of the 13th victim, John Howlett, Nielsen cut open the stomach and started chopping up the organs on a cutting board and flushing them down the toilet. To disintegrate more of the tissue, he boiled pieces of the body starting with the head, followed by the hands, feet, and ribs. Flesh, hair, and organs were flushed, and the bones were broken up and tossed in the trash. Some bigger pieces, like the shoulder blades, were thrown over the garden fence into the waste ground, while others were kept in bags in the tea chest. And that's as graphic as we're going to get today. That was absolutely disgusting. Absolutely awful.
I want to take a shower.
Yeah. Yeah. The body of the 14th victim, Graham Allen, and the 15th, Stephen Sinclair, were disposed of in the same manner, except Sinclair was not completely dismembered because Nielsen was arrested before he finished. And so this brings us all the way back to part one, when the plumbers were called and human remains were discovered in the drains. Do you remember?
I do. I do want to puke now.
Yeah, pretty gross, pretty nasty, pretty gnarly. Before leaving work on February 9th, 1983, Dennis Nielsen told his assistant, Don Stowe, "If I am not in tomorrow, I will be either ill, dead, or in jail," end quote. Little did Don know that Nielsen would be arrested for murder only hours later. When Nielsen arrived home, he was greeted by Detective Chief Inspector Jay, who said that he had come about the drains. And Dennis asked why would the police have any interest in the drains? And the detective said, "Well, Dennis, why don't you take us up to your flat and we'll tell you why." So they went up to the attic where Dennis lived, and Detective Jay tells Nielsen that the blockage had been identified as human remains. And Nielsen acted surprised, but Detective Jay was not fooled, and he said, "Don't mess about. Where's the rest of the body?" To which Nielsen replied, "In two plastic bags in the wardrobe next door. I'll show you." So Dennis Nielsen was arrested on suspicion of murder, obviously, and he was very talkative with the police. He told them on the way to the station that he had likely murdered between 15 and 16 young men.
Mm.
Of course, he wasn't sure because he's an asshole. At first, he declined to hire a lawyer and was held in custody while investigators searched his flat and discovered the remains of three victims, which at the time were unidentified. 2 days later, on February 11th, they started interrogating him, and he was interviewed 16 times over 31 hours, during which he confessed to the murders, along with seven other attempted murders. Wow. So he confessed to 15 murders and 7 attempted murders in over the course of 16 interviews. And he drew a map of the garden at Melrose Avenue, which they brought him to also so that he could show them where he had disposed of the bodies. On the morning of February 11th, Dennis Nielsen was officially charged with the murder of Stephen Sinclair, who was the first victim to be identified. And Stephen Sinclair was the last victim.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, the case was blowing up in the media, and Dennis asked the police for a paper because he wanted to read about himself. The following day, Nielsen was brought to the magistrate's court to start facing trial for the murders. He refused to wear a blanket to hide his face, so there are pictures from the press of Nielsen being escorted to and from the car. After this, he was housed in Brixton Prison while more evidence was being gathered. Nielsen's appointed lawyer was Ronald Moss, and during the course of his trial, he had fired and rehired him 3 times. And during the times that he had no lawyer, Dennis was unsuccessfully representing himself. He was planning on pleading not guilty to the murders, which was quite shocking to everyone after he had literally confessed, but was later persuaded to plead guilty with diminished responsibility due to mental disorder by Ralph Hyams, who represented him very briefly.
Goodbye.
Right, right. People were outraged, reasonably so. While awaiting trial, Nielsen developed feelings for a criminal who was in prison with him, whose name was David Martin, and he was serving time for burglaries. This didn't last very long, however. And that's all the information that I had on that, apparently, because Nielsen just couldn't keep any of his relationships. Bleep was taken in by an animal rescue center in southwest London, but within a week, she got sick and passed away.
Oh, no, Bleep! Not Bleep!
Yeah, very sad.
He's fucking up everything.
I know, right? I know. So Nielsen spent much of his time in prison writing his autobiography, which he titled History of a Drowning Boy. And while doing this, he was also working with Brian Masters on his book, Killing for Company. Eventually, the investigators were able to identify 7 other victims in addition to Stephen Sinclair. Nielsen's committal hearing took place on May 26th, 1983, in the Old Bailey, which is the central criminal court of England and Wales, during which the judge approved the prosecution to try Nielsen for the murders of Stephen Sinclair, John Howlett, Billy Sutherland, Martin Duffy, Kenneth Ockenden, and Malcolm Barlow, along with the attempted murders of Paul Nobbs and Douglas Stewart, which was to take place, this trial was to take place in October of 1983. On Monday, October 24th, the trial commenced in the Old Bailey with Justice David Croom Johnson presiding, and as I had mentioned before, Dennis decided to plead with diminished responsibility by reason of mental disorder, which would mean that the charges of murder would be reduced to manslaughter. So the prosecution, of course, presented Nielsen's own fucking confession to the jury, along with the evidence of human remains found by investigators in both of the flats and witness testimony from surviving victims, as well as the detective chief inspector Jay. The defense brought up forensic psychiatrist Dr. James McKeith, who testified that Nielsen was paranoid, unsure of his identity, experiencing feelings of grandiosity and desperation for attention, and also depersonalization. The diagnosis from Dr. McKeith also included paranoid, schizoid, hysterical, and sociopathic tendencies. Wow, that's a lot.
Too much, actually.
Way too much. Dr. Patrick Galway also testified for the defense and stated that Nielsen suffered from arrested personality development. During cross-examination, however, by the prosecution, the doctors were not able to say that Nielsen was unaware of what he was doing while committing the crimes, and that is the definition of diminished responsibility. So basically, they were trying to prove that he was not of sound mind while committing these murders, but they, on the stand, they weren't able to say that he that was the case. They were just able to say, give these diagnoses of different things that they think was he was suffering from.
Yada, yada, yada.
So, yeah, right. So the prosecution also called Dr. Paul Bowden as an expert witness, and Dr. Bowden was a prison psychiatrist at Brixton Prison, where he had interviewed Nielsen 16 times over, 16 times over the past 8 months. He rejected the diagnosis of the defense psychiatrist on the stand and stated that Nielsen was not suffering from a disorder and that he simply enjoyed the feeling of having power over his victims. Wow. So
deep.
This psychiatrist, right. This psychiatrist did not have a lot to say. So the trial lasted 9 days, and the jury deliberated but was unable to reach a unanimous decision. And so the following day, Justice Croom Johnson announced that he would accept the majority decision. And so on November 4th, 1983, the jury found Dennis Nielsen guilty on all counts. Justice Croom Johnson sentenced Nielsen to life in prison with a minimum of 25 years. And he clarified that the sentence would have been the same even if he had been found guilty of manslaughter due to diminished responsibility because his condition was not treatable. So he started serving his time at Wormwood Scrubs Prison in London. His fellow inmates gave him a hard time in prison, and on December 20th, 1983, he was slashed with a razor in the exercise yard by Albert Moffat, who was charged with the assault and openly admitted to it, saying that Nielsen had made sexual advances on him, though the assault charges were eventually dropped. Nielsen was moved to Wakefield Prison later that year and put in special housing for sex offenders, where he struck up a romance with 28-year-old Jimmy Butler, who was serving time for an armed robbery. As usual, this did not last long, and their relationship actually turned violent, and Jimmy was eventually transferred to another prison. In 1990, he was transferred to Full Sutton Prison in Yorkshire, where one night two men broke into his cell with a bowl of boiling water and sugar to assault him. but he threw a battery at them, apparently, and they fled.
I mean, so he was moving. Battery versus boiling hot sugar water.
Yeah, I don't really.
That's a big battery.
That's a big old battery, right? Yeah. So he was moved again to the segregation unit and then the vulnerable prison unit and then transferred again the following year in 1991 to Albany Prison on the Isle of Wight and then again in 1993 to Moor Prison north of London. I'm not really sure why he was moved around so much. Maybe it has something to do with him having awful relationships with everybody that he was in contact with.
I think that's it.
I don't know.
Nothing more, nothing less.
And so around, okay, this is interesting. So around the mid-1990s, the Home Secretary Michael Howard announced that a whole life tariff would be applied to Nielsen, which would prevent him from ever being eligible for parole. So that's just kind of like a thing that I guess they passed for like a little while in the 90s where it would make it so that certain prisoners would never be able to apply for parole. Interesting. On November 27th, 2001, Nielsen was transferred back to Full Sutton Prison in the midst of a dispute about his autobiography transcripts because apparently he wanted rights or something like that. This ended up being like a really, really weird big thing of his about his autobiography because they didn't want him to write his autobiography and he wanted to write his autobiography and it was just like a whole big hullabaloo. And so the manuscript was never returned to Nielsen despite his appeals, but Nielsen kept writing. And in 2013, portions of the book History of a Drowning Boy were published in a book written by Russ Coffey, titled Dennis Nielsen, Conversations with Britain's Most Evil Serial Killer. On the morning of Thursday, May 10th, 2018, Nielsen complained of abdominal pain and was taken to the nurse's clinic and was diagnosed to be suffering from a urine infection or kidney stones and was given paracetamol and sent back to his cell. Later that evening, he was found unresponsive and disoriented. Over the day, things got much worse, and in the evening, he was taken to York District Hospital, where he was diagnosed as having a ruptured abdominal aortic aneurysm.
What does that mean?
That is a great question. I don't have the answer to it. I can look that up right quick. Let me see. Okay, it looks like an aortic aneurysm is basically just like a big bulge in an artery, in the aorta, which is a large artery that carries blood from the heart to the chest and torso.
So was he in pain?
Most definitely.
Hey, most definitely. Get it.
That's right.
Suffer.
So he underwent emergency surgery and then had another operation the following day, but the doctors were unable to stop the internal bleeding. And on the morning of Saturday, May 12th, 2018, Dennis Nielsen died at 72 years old. His body was cremated in secret and the ashes were given to an anonymous friend.
Friend?
Dennis. Right? I don't know. Didn't know he had any friends.
Interesting. I mean, I'm glad he was in pain. His last moments on earth.
Yeah, well said, yeah.
Glad I've actually... That sounds very painful, actually.
Yeah, it does. In some of the videos, the documentaries that I watched, I watched people talk about how friendly he was and how they just thought he was, like, a super cool, friendly guy. Like, there were some people who were talking about this who he never even, like, tried to strangle. And they were just like, yeah, I thought he was a cool guy. Like, I thought he was a normal person. And then there are other people who were like, yeah, I thought he was a normal person. And then I woke up in the bathtub and he was trying to drown me, you know? Like, this man is just all over, all off the wall. Like, he's operating like everything's normal, but he's clearly not normal. So thank goodness that he's no longer with us.
Yeah. We could use that space for something else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. What could we use that space for? A tree? You could plant a tree.
You can always plant a tree.
Always plant a tree. What else could you do with that space? You can do anything you want. Just get rid of them.
Just get rid of them. Anything you want. I can't tell you guys how happy I am to be done with this. And thank you so much for being patient with me for finishing this for y'all.
I'm so happy you're finished, too.
Yes.
So, Justin, are we going to take a break for Christmas?
Probably not. No, I think we'll be good. I think we'll be here.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be here and we'll be queer, as always.
Here and queer.
Yeah. Well, but that being said, I don't want to make any promises. So if things are weird over the next couple weeks, guys, please just be patient with us.
Be patient with me.
It's very likely that our next episode, I'll be recording from a hotel or an Airbnb. It'll likely be in Denver or something.
That is cool. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess.
That is cool. Yeah. Well, if you haven't already, please, please follow us on Instagram at Paranormal Cracktivity Podcast.
Yes, please follow us on Instagram. You can DM us on Instagram if you have any suggestions for stories that you want to listen to. And you can also send those to our email at paranormalcracktivitypodcast@gmail.com.
We do not have a Twitter.
No Twitter, no Facebook.
No YouTube account. No yet. YouTube.
Yet. We do have a Patreon.
We do.
If you want to have access to early access to episodes and access to bonus content, you can find that only on Patreon, which is patreon.com/paranormalcracktivity.
I think those are all the pages we have.
Those are all the pages. You can find all those pages on our website at paranormalcracktivitypodcast.com.
Absolutely.
And we hope that you come back next time and listen again. And
tis the season.
Tis the season.
Hug a tree.
We hope that you hug a tree. And we hope that you don't smoke crack.
That's not absolutely not cute. Do not do that. Ew, crack. Ew, what?
Ew.
Oh my All gosh. Right. My next case has something to do with crack.
Oh, okay. On brand. So next, so guys, come back next week and you'll have a crack case. Crack case for the crackheads. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. The following day, Nielsen was brought to the
magistrates.
He was brought to the magistrates' court